I want to take a look at the Psalms today and look at them as far as literature goes. And I cringe because I know what's going to happen. I'm going to say, hey, let's look at some poetry here. Well, I've taught junior high, high school, and college students for a lot of years. And I've discovered, as if I didn't know this before, but people really don't like poetry. And yet the Bible has something like almost a third of the Bible is poetry. And of course we think of the book of Psalms, but it's all over the Bible. Book of Job has it. Anyway, so we're going to be taking a look now at poetry. There's got to be some value to it. As long as people have been here on this earth, they've had poetry. So it must have some importance, and I think it'll help us actually get a lot more out of the Bible if we at least understand some of the basics about poetry. So let's start with Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He's like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. Not so the wicked. They're like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Now, it's a short psalm, so it'll be easy for us to take a look at that. To get an idea of the power of poetry and some of the importance of poetry, what I've done is I've taken this psalm, and what you want to do is look at it again sometime. You could even stop right now, but I'm going to keep going. But stop and think about how it's said and the way it's said. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it into prose. In other words, non-poetry. So prose, like you'd encounter in an encyclopedia or an article you're reading or a newspaper or something like that. And I'm going to give you the exact same message. This will be the same information, but it's not going to be in a poetry form. So here we go. It's good for people if they don't hang around bad individuals. Good people should meditate a lot on God and His law. They will prosper if they continue to do this. But bad people have no depth of character and will eventually be separated from God and righteous people. The future looks better for the righteous than for the wicked. All right, so I want you to think about that for just a minute. Does it say the same thing as Psalm 1? Yes, the message is the same, that it's better to be a righteous person and seek righteousness and to meditate than to be a person who doesn't. But I would suggest, and I'm sure you agree with me, that what I said really is flat. It's not very interesting, but the way that first Psalm said it was far more powerful. So what seems to be the characteristics of poetry that we see in that first Psalm? Well, first of all, you notice, obviously, it's done in lines. The lines are broken up. It's not like you're reading a newspaper to the end of the column, and then you come back and read the next part. It's not like a book where you read to the end of the page and then come back and go to the left again. It's broken into small bits and units of lines. And what does that do? That forces you to slow down. And poetry, and maybe that's one reason people don't like it. We're in a hurry-up society that says, give me all the information fast, and then I'll move on. Poetry says, no, no, slow down. Experience something. Savor it. Like eating, you don't wolf a steak down. You cut it into bite-sized pieces and enjoy each bite. So you're forced to slow down. And I would suggest you need to do this when you're reading the Bible, anywhere there's poetry, slow down. It's very different than reading stories. And also, as you read Psalm 1, I would say something else you notice is that it allows you to see things. Think about my translation. There's nothing in there that gives you a mental picture. It says things like, good people will prosper. It says bad people have no depth of character. But you notice those are just all abstractions. I mean, you can't picture anything if I say no depth of character. The future looks better. What does that mean? I don't know. There's nothing that gives you anything to hang on to. But you can see things in that psalm, can't you? Talking about walking and talking about standing, talking about sitting, and talking about a tree and streams of water and fruit and leaves and chaff and wind and the Lord watching over things. I mean, all of that allows you to see something. And so good poetry is vivid. It just gives you all sorts of mental pictures. Here's something else I think you'll agree. There were no comparisons made in my translation. It was really poor. It just says, this is good and this is bad. But did you notice the comparisons made? This person, who's the righteous person, is not just called a righteous person. There's a comparison. He is like a tree. And we all know trees. And we'll come back to what's going on with the comparison, but comparisons are powerful, not just in poetry. They're powerful all throughout life. When you say things like, her eyes burned into me, or she was digging into her purse like a small terrier. I mean, these kinds of things give us all sorts of comparisons that are interesting and pleasing to us. Now, the other thing I would say regarding that Psalm 1 is how concentrated it is. It says a lot in a short space. And then finally, did you hear some repetition in there? Blessed is the man who does not do this, or does not do this, or does not do this. Lord watches over the way of this group, but something bad's going to happen to that group. So we get all of this repetition. It's not rhyming, but there's a rhythm that gets going in this. So those are some typical characteristics of poetry. Not all poetry, not every poetry poem will have these things, but they will have lines, they will allow you to see some things, they will give you comparisons, it'll say a lot in a short space, which means you do have to slow down, and it often has repetition of one kind or another to create, I would say, a musical effect. Well, that's some of the general characteristics of poetry, and you want to look for that as you're reading the Bible. If it's concentrated, slow down. If you hear that repetition, that must be important. They're trying to drum something into you. If a comparison is being made, try to see what that comparison suggests. For example, to say somebody's like a tree. There are ways that people are like trees, and we'll come back to that. So you want to think about that. You simply cannot read poetry as quickly in the Bible as you can other forms of literature. All right, well, let's focus now on the kinds of devices that a poet might use, and in fact, is used all through the Bible. And that's what makes it effective. So here's the first one. One typical piece of a literary device used here is imagery. I mean, look at the word image. Image is a picture. And good poetry gives you concrete, particular things that you can picture in your mind. Remember, one more time, my translation was terrible. It just says, the good will prosper. It says, the bad have no depth of character. There was no imagery there. Let me give you a few places in the Bible that I think have some excellent imagery. How about one that we all know? I'm going to the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness. Let me pick out a couple of other places. The valley of the shadow of death, your rod and your staff, a table, you anoint my head, my cup overflows. I mean, do you notice how often you can picture some of these things? Let me take you to something that's a little less known. It's in the book of Nahum. And Nahum is talking about the destruction of the Assyrian Empire. And he is going to use a lot of imagery to suggest what's coming to Nineveh. I'm in Nahum chapter 2. An attacker advances against you, Nineveh. Guard the fortress, watch the road, brace yourselves, marshal all your strength. And then verse 3, the shields of his soldiers are red, the warriors are clad in scarlet, the metal on his on the chariots flashes, on the day they are made ready, the spears of pine are brandished. The chariots storm through the streets, rushing back and forth through the squares. They look like flaming torches. They dart about like lightning. And there are more places all through the book of Nahum. Nahum is amazing. I mean, just you can picture what's going on there. Here's one other place. Let's go to Song of Solomon, sometimes called Song of Songs. And, okay, here we go. Here's a discussion of a lover. It says, he has taken me to the banquet hall, and his banner over me is love. Strengthen me with raisins, refresh me with apples. I'm faint with love. His left arm is under my head, and his right arm embraces me, etc., etc. I mean, can you picture that? Sure. How about this? Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest is my lover among the young men. I delight to sit in his shade, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. We have the sense of taste and sight and feeling there. I mean, that's imagery to make you feel like you're there. So good poetry will do that. And again, slow down and enjoy that imagery. Try to picture those things in your head. Okay, let's talk about the couple of figures of speech they're called that are used all through poetry and used in the Bible. Let's start with a very simple one. It's called simile, S-I-M-I-L-E. And it's just a comparison using like or as, and the comparison works effectively if it's two very different things. So this is not a good example of symmetry. If you say, oh, look, he has a blue shirt on, and that's a lot like that other guy's blue shirt. Well, you're just comparing two shirts. Or if you say, well, I like this certain water better than this other water, you're making a comparison that's true, but you're not doing two very different things. So let me show you some examples. Let's go back to the book of Psalms. I'm going to do Psalm 42. All right, Psalm 42. Remember, it can be like or as. As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, O God. Let's stop for just a minute there and think about that. The comparison here is as. So if we kind of reverse it, he says, my soul needs God so badly. What is it compared to? It's compared to a deer that's out in the, can you imagine a deer out there in the heat of the day panting for streams of water? And when a deer finds streams of water, can you imagine how good that would make that deer feel and getting that water into his or her system? That's a powerful simile, a comparison that's being made there. What's the value of figures of speech? I don't think I could take you other places, but they're all over the Bible. Well, what's the value of a figure of speech? Something is like something else. Well, obviously, the more different the two things are, the more surprising that is, and the more memorable it becomes. So when you say my soul, a soul is not even a physical entity. Being compared to a physical entity, an animal, that's quite a difference. And I think it creates that memorable feeling of, oh, this soul thing, which is kind of hard to describe. Oh, I can see it as that deer is panting, and it's vivid, and it's short, it's powerful, and it allows us to meditate, doesn't it? To say, oh, I do need God. I need God in my life as much as any animal out there who's dying of thirst and comes across a stream of water. So again, slow down and appreciate those if you see a like or an as. Let's try another figure of speech, different kind. This one's called a metaphor. So a metaphor is a little bit different. It is comparing two things, again, like a simile, but this time there's no cue word like using like or as. It's a direct comparison. This thing is something else. So let me take you to a few places. I'll spend some time in Psalms. So how about Psalms 57:4? I am in the midst of lions. I lie among ravenous beasts, men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Well, now, wait a minute. That's not literally true, is it? He says, I'm among men whose teeth are, not like, they are spears and arrows, and their tongues, he doesn't use like or as, he says, they are sharp swords. And so I like the use of metaphors. I think they're stronger than similes because they don't wave at you and warn you what's coming. They just whack you across the side of the head. They say, these men, their teeth are spears and arrows. Can you imagine that? They are that sharp and they are that mean-spirited, and their tongues are sharp swords. They can pierce you. We know people like that, don't we? Haven't we been around people who whatever comes out of their mouth slashes others and hurts badly? So that's a metaphor. Let's try another one. Stay in Psalm. Go to 84. All right, so here's Psalm 84, verse 11. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing does he withhold from those whose walk is blameless. Let's go back to that first line. For the Lord God is, it doesn't say like, it doesn't say as, the Lord God is a sun and shield. How powerful is that? You put God right next to the word sun, and it makes you think about that. How is God a sun? S-U-N, not S-O-N, S-U-N. Well, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. It seems pretty obvious, doesn't it? The sun gives out life. The sun gives out warmth. The sun exposes all. The sun shines, and it's glorious to look at. In fact, it's hard to look at. So these are metaphors, and I think they're stronger than similes. They push those two items much closer together and allow you to really enjoy these comparisons. Again, look for them. You'll find them all over the place. Well, let me give you one example, by the way. This is going to be a little more lighthearted, but just to let you know how powerful and how often these things are used in literature, not just the Bible. This is a Dilbert comic. He encounters his mom. She says, "How's work, Dilbert?" And of course, Dilbert, if you know Dilbert at all, everything's miserable for him. "Well, Mom," he says, "I'm like a fly stuck in a thick tar of despair. Incompetence hangs in the air like the cold stench of death. I'm drowning, and monkeys dressed as lifeguards are throwing me anvils. My job has convinced me that life is a stale joke with no punchline. I long for the comfort of the grave." His mom says, "Next time, just say it's fine." Dilbert says, "I enjoy our talks." And the mom says, "It's fine." Well, I hope you appreciated that. I mean, obviously, that's overkill. But he says, "I'm like a fly stuck in despair. Incompetence at his workplace is like a stench of death. Monkeys are throwing him anvils. Life is a stale joke." I mean, those are powerful, aren't they? I mean, even if you end up laughing and realizing he's probably going on and on. But that's, I love those. Those are powerful things. So look for those items, especially look for imagery. Slow down, appreciate it. Let it play in your head there as you're reading this. Look for figures of speech, especially I mentioned two. A simile and a metaphor. And again, stop. Don't just rush on to the next verse. Ask yourself, how is God like the sun? And consider that, because the writer put that in there on purpose to have you slow down and think about it. All right, let's do one other thing that's going on in poetry. Not all poetry, but Hebrew poetry especially. So whenever you're reading through the Bible and you come across poetry, keep this in mind. For the Hebrews, the ancient Hebrews, you did not rhyme things. So you don't say, roses are red, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, and so are you. Okay, that's a rhyme. You have violets are blue, and so are you. And we think of poetry as having to rhyme. Well, that's not true. Especially a lot of modern poetry doesn't rhyme at all. So in a way, as you read Hebrew poetry, you'll be thinking about much more modern poetry. It does not rhyme. But what it does do is something called parallelism. So what are two parallel lines? They're lines that never come together and never fly apart. They stay the same distance apart. So what you have in parallelism is different words, but a similar mirror image as far as grammar and ideas go. So let me give you a couple of examples from outside the Bible, and then we'll take a look at the Bible. So we're talking about parallelism. What did Abraham Lincoln say in his Gettysburg Address? He wanted the government to remain. He said, government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Now, do you hear the pattern there? Those are prepositions in English. So of, by, and for are prepositions. Of the people, by the people, for the people. I think they're actually saying three different things. But you hear the pattern, and people love patterns. And so you'll hear that. Your ear will perk up when you hear it. Let me give you one more example. Winston Churchill. There was something called the Battle of Britain, in which British fighter pilots held off and shot down a lot of German airplanes that came over and bombed England. They were trying to bomb England and get it ready to invade. And they had such huge losses, they called off their invasion of England. And it saved the British people. And so after the battle was over, Churchill said, "Never was so much owed by so many to so few." And his point there was very few pilots fought off these huge German forces and saved the entire nation. But that isn't said as well, is it? Never was so much owed by so many to so few. So you hear that pattern? So much, so many, so few. That's not exactly the same, but it's parallel. It's different word choices, but it's the same grammar pattern. Maybe one more. Martin Luther King. What did he say? He didn't want his kids to be known by the color of the skin, but by the content of their character. Well, do you hear that whole pattern there? Color is a noun. Of their skin is a prepositional phrase. So he said, I don't want my kids known by the color of their skin. I want them to be known by the content of their character. Content is a noun. Of their character is a prepositional phrase. So we get color of skin, content of character. That's parallelism. So some of the best speakers use parallelism. In fact, Martin Luther King used a lot of it. Why? He was a reverend. After all, it's Reverend Martin Luther King. And the Bible was in him. He had it coming and going. He knew so much of the Bible as a pastor. And it is full of this repetition. Let me just take you back to Psalms again. And we'll take a look at a couple of those. Let's go to Psalm 2. The one enthroned, this is Psalm 2, verse 4. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. You hear that repetition? Then he rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath. Okay, do you hear the pattern there? What does he do? He rebukes them and terrifies them. What does he do? He laughs, he scoffs. Do you hear the repetition going on there? How about Psalm 19:1? What does it say? The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. Okay, do you hear that again? The heavens declare, the skies proclaim. They pour forth speech. They display knowledge day after day, night after night. Do you hear that pattern there? That was pleasing to the Hebrew mind and to the Hebrew ear. Now, we still use them today. So look for that kind of parallelism. What's the value? Why would a poet do that? Well, it's a rhythm. It builds in a rhythm, and our ears pick that up, and it's very pleasing. It's like drums in a song. It's artistic. It takes some basic message and sculpts it in a certain way that pleases us. It's just beautiful to look at. I mean, look at some of the most famous buildings of the world, the Taj Mahal, the U.S. Capitol building, the Lincoln Memorial. They're all done in parallel structure. One part will look identical to the other part of the building. You can split it right down the middle and be a mirror image. That's artistic work. Again, what else does it do? It causes us to slow down, and it causes us to hear something twice. Remember some of the things we just heard? The heavens declare, the skies proclaim. So it slows us down, allows us to meditate. And it helps us to memorize, I would say. So as a wrap-up, poetry shows God is an artist. There's an enjoyment with the words. I hope it helps you enter into the Bible more. I hope it involves more of your emotions. I hope you appreciate the creativity that goes into it. And as you think about this, if you want a little further demonstration, why don't you go to a couple of places that I'm going to suggest here to see what the prose words sound like, and then right next door will be poetry discussing the same event, and look how different they are. So if you look at the Song of Moses and Miriam in Exodus 15, enjoy the poetry there. And then the place where you're going to hear the story of Deborah, it's in Judges 4 and 5. It's the same story. It's told in a prose form in chapter 4, and then chapter 5 is called the Song of Deborah. Look at how that song takes that event and artistically recreates it. It's powerful. Some other places you might go to for some wonderful poetry: David's Lament for Saul and Jonathan. That's 2 Samuel chapter 1. Remember, Saul and his son Jonathan have died defending the Hebrew people. How about David's praise for God's deliverance? That's Psalm 18. Look at Jeremiah 6, the story of Jerusalem under siege. Read the New Testament in Luke 1. Mary has a song. How about the fall of Babylon in Revelation 18? So I hope as you read, you don't treat the entire Bible as if it's one long sermon or one long article, one long essay. It's not. It's a lot of different kinds of literature, and one prominent kind is poetry. And if you have some questions, I hope you contact me. You can either do gary.zacharias@gmail.com, or you can go to my apologeticsforlife.org And I have a lot of information there. I also have a web page through Palomar College, and contact me and I'll give it to you in case you'd like to go there and hear more about poetry and all. But I just want to overcome people's fear and misunderstandings about poetry. I'd love people to enjoy it and to gain from it and to make their Bible reading just that much richer.